Welcome back to Film Vloggers. We review films and flog dead horses, so you don't have to. Is this week's film choice a complete waste of your viewing time? Much like flogging slash beating a dead horses, get it? Please head over to www.filmvloggers.com to check out all of our previous vloggings. And while you're there, maybe hang out for a while, look around and vote for our next film. Click on vote, or visit www.filmvloggers.com/vote. Are you an idiot? If so, please check out our idiot's guide to reviewing us, where even a big dummy like you can leave us a red-hot review. Here at Film Vloggers, we pride ourselves on offering one-star content with five-star effort. Once on the website, please click on Idiot's Guide, or visit us at www.filmvloggers.com/review-us. That should have been Idiot's Guide. My fault, I didn't change the URL. Annoying. Once again, filmvloggers.com/review-us. Believe it or not, we now have a Patreon. I know what you're thinking. You have the audacity to ask us to pay to receive more of this. Pause for dramatic effect. Yes. We have a Patreon exclusive show called Nitpickers. I think you'll like it. Please visit www.filmvloggers.com/support-us. Again, that hyphen is annoying, should have removed it. Or head straight to our Patreon page. patreon.com/filmwafflers. No idea why I did film wafflers. Another mistake. Where you can support us for as little as £1 British or £1.50. And while you're on the website, punch that big purple subscribe button and tell a friend about the vlog. Wife, husband, boyfriend, girlfriend, partner, mistress, your nan, granddad, your kids. They can tell their friends. They can tell their friends at school about the vlog. But in all seriousness, this really helps the podcast grow and enables us to enrich or ruin the lives of the hundreds of millions of earlobes we haven't reached yet. Welcome to Film Vloggers. Grab a vlog and join us as we go to work on our latest film offering and try to answer the question, does this film feel like flogging a dead horse? The answer is probably yes, but let's find out.
Hello, Ben.
Hi, Tom.
Hiya. We're doing some Phantasm today. It's my first look look into this series. What do you think of this?
Oh, bro.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, but I think you've left the fucking eggs on the stove, have you?
Well, I mean, this needs to be addressed because you're telling me that it keeps popping up. It's a barrier just outside the block that I live in. So, we're just going to have to become, that's just going to have to become a sort of third character in this podcast. Barrier, you see.
So, Phantasm, yeah. This is my first experience with it. I've seen it recently on this new documentary I watched, In Search of Darkness. Yeah, pretty good. Based on 80s horror films, and it popped up again. Even though I think this is 79, this came out. But it popped up, the second one comes out in 88, so that's why it got linked back. I've seen that character of the tall man before. I've seen it pop up in, you know, documentaries, and when people have been talking about horror films, they say, oh, you know, you should check out this. And I've just, yeah, it's just always just sort of passed me by. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I've checked it out, and it was quite something.
I mean, I recognise the cover. And I recognised that ball bearing. I didn't actually recognise him, but I recognised that, you know, that levitating, that metal blob that becomes quite sort of an important part later.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the ball is a lot more, well, not a lot more, but it's probably more people know about that sphere than they do. Because I think that sphere's gone on to be in like computer games and stuff. I think it's a weapon in that Turok game with the dinosaurs. The dinosaur thing's dinosaurs. I mean, there's a weapon it's basically that sphere that you can blob at people and it attaches to the head. So,
really? And that all started in this?
I believe so, yeah. Yeah, I think that's his inspiration from Phantasm.
Oh, interesting. Well, it's obscene, isn't it? I mean, whether we've maybe just missed the bandwagon on this, I read somewhere that apparently one of the big target markets for this is very young men. So like, well, not even young men, like sort of teenagers. Because it was, it's really explosive, isn't it? I mean, it's quite trippy. I mean, I don't know whether I've seen enough Argento to actually make this comparison. It's almost quite Dario Argento-esque in some ways, in terms of it's almost kind of surreal, isn't it? Some of it. It's almost not to be taken literally.
On the face of it, it's just a silly horror film with some guy walking around throwing balls at people. There is a lot more going on underneath the surface. You know, there's a lot about, you know, mortality and death, as you don't know at the end of the film if what happened, you know, Mike had just dreamt it up or it did actually happen. People then looked to that and you know, thought maybe that's his way of grieving for the death of his mum and dad, of old Jody. There's a lot going on. As you said, it's quite surreal, it's quite trippy. There's a lot of nightmare dream sequences. So, you know, you're always kind of sitting there going, oh, well, was that real? Did that happen? Who's this? You know, even the opening scene, you've got, oh, what's her face? Lady Lavender, apparently she's called. But then, oh, God, is it the tall man? Because he pops in.
Yeah. Yeah, he does.
So even,
yeah,
right, you know, from the opening scene, you're like, well, what's going on here? What's this?
Yeah. No, it is. It's quite interesting. I mean, I've got to say, I wasn't sitting there feeling like I was, you know, all these themes were already hitting me in the face. I think after watching it and then we're doing a bit of reading around it, you know, they've gone for certain themes. I mean, I've got to say, I wasn't sitting there going, God, this is unreal. This is a really beautiful meditation on grief. Did that work for you? Well, I mean, were you getting that?
No, I wasn't sitting there kind of weeping, going, oh, God, yeah, I know this. I've seen this. But I could see it. I can understand where that's come from and how those elements and themes have been attached to it. You know, it does hold that.
I think sort of just to sort of kick things off, I guess we should lay down who the big hitters are here. We've got Don Coscarelli as the director. You familiar with him?
Oh, what more?
You know Don's work?
I think he had done a couple of other low budget ones before this. You know, this was his break. Oh, I think with him, he did everything, didn't he? He was the writer, the producer, the editor, the director. You know, it was a full job. Very low budget. There was stuff about how he used to hire the equipment needed to make the film on like a Friday and then just cram all the recording and all the editing and the filming of it on the weekend to then give back on Monday just to save money because, you know, there was a very small budget attached to the project. I imagine it's quite hard for someone who's a director to also edit their own work as well. Myself, you know, the editor of the pod, you know, sometimes there might be just something that's golden. An absolute just classic said by either me or you. And, you know, it might just not fit in with the tone of what we're saying. So it may just have to go. It's tough.
It's tough to get rid of the nuggets of gold. But yeah, I mean, to an element, but I guess he's got sole sort of creative ownership of it, hasn't he? Which is something that I think can be lost if you start getting a whole load of other folk involved. The kind of hit, I mean, in terms of like the actors and that, I think some of these, you said, this was kind of their thing. You know, they had the Phantasm series and that was kind of where they went. So I think particularly Mike, the kid who plays Mike, I think he was a Phantasm to the end, wasn't he?
He doesn't come back in the second one. I think he's recast, actually. I think the powers that be wanted someone a bit more famous to take up the role. So he dropped out of the sequel, but then came back, I think, for the third, maybe the fourth. I think he dies at some point as well during it. Spoiler.
Right, because I can imagine that. I imagine some of the later series, some of the later sequels, I imagine delve more into that kind of other world thing going on, which is...
I don't know if he's in all of them. He's not in the sequel, as I said, but he's in... Yeah, I think he pops up in some form in the rest of them, the original actor. And then you got Reggie, played by Reggie Bannister, I think. He's in all of them, yeah. You know, I thought he was dead several times in this, but somehow he's come out and he's pretty much one of the cornerstones of the series.
The ice cream man.
I think he's the only one. I think he's basically the last man standing at the end.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he was a goner because, I mean, the whole way they set his character up, you think, oh, this is just kind of like the slightly nerky friend. But yeah, he does actually become quite a sort of prevalent part. Yeah.
Just a guy just in the background, yeah, mild entertaining. You know, our old friend Burt Gummer from Tremors somehow makes his way through the whole series, through, you know, 30, 40 years of just of film after film.
No, it's quite interesting that. But in terms of the main characters that we're dealing with here, I'm just going to talk about character names because I don't think the actors are particularly noteworthy.
Well, I think a lot of it's either their first film or they didn't really do anything after this.
So it's Mike and Jodie. Jodie being is male, which was initially a little bit confusing for me. I didn't know.
But it's spelled J-O-D-Y, so you know it's fine. Well, for me, it's dubious. If I would know it as a girl's name, but you know, fine.
Yeah. Fair enough. So they're brothers, Jodie being the older brother. Reggie, who's a friend of Jodie, sort of similar age, it works as an ice cream man in the town. And then, yeah, like you say, we've got the tall man, who is the sort of main bad guy in this. The
Angus Scrimm. Got a bit of Angus Scrimm for you there.
Angus Scrimm. What's noteworthy about Angus Scrimm, Ben?
Oh, well, I think Phantasm. I think this was it. Similar to Reggie, he was just synonymous with the tall man. And then you have these horror conventions where they go and interact with the fans and you get like a really good small kind of group of niche people who really appreciate the film. So Phantasm, for example, is just one of those, isn't it? It's like Hellraiser. It's a series that probably, you know, got maybe worse as it went along, but it always retained that core fan base who then used to go to horror conventions and all meet up. And, you know, it's quite nice, I think, rather than go to something like Comic-Con, where it's just this big generic thing where, like, you know, fucking all the Avengers are sitting around. You can't get, you know, you can't get in. You've got a queue for fucking 15 hours just to get, you know, just to get a peek of Iron Man. I think with this, it's a lot more intimate. You can go and, you know, I'm sure a lot of people who are fans of the series might have gone and spoke to the tall man, got an autograph. I like that element of it. It's nice.
I guess maybe because horror films are just by their nature a bit more experimental. So the reason why, you know, a horror film has less wide appeal is because inevitably they have to make decisions in the creative decisions, which either really work for one person, in which case, because they're quite experimental, if they work for that person, they are absolutely on board and they just laud it for it and go, oh, you know, I think that's really brilliantly portrayed in this. Whereas everyone else would be like totally put off by it. And that's why you maybe get that kind of very extreme fan base, but is usually on a scale a lot smaller than your sort of bigger budget stuff, which kind of is a bit more kind of neutral, isn't it?
If you're Angus Scrimm or you're Reggie, you've basically got, you know, basically got a job for life. Yeah. You know,
it's really not a great deal of work.
I'd say that they're not multi-millionaires, but I'm sure they're doing okay. And I'm sure they're doing something they love. So that's, you know, that's all you need, mate. That's all you need.
That's absolutely right. Yeah, quite right. We should really just delve into the meat of this, Ben. What do you think? Are you ready?
Well, so we start off in a graveyard of all places. Are you spooked?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's very atmospheric, yeah.
So, you know, I put down in my notes some graveyard chode. So we're starting off with that. And we're starting off with some, well, you know, you may know a bit of this. We're starting off with effectively Tommy and some Austin Powers going, you know, oh, baby.
That was great, baby. And there's no movement. There's no actual movement. There's no actual thrusting going on here. This is a very unenthusiastic sex scene.
No, I mean, she's just popped on top, isn't she? She's popped on top. He's giving her the old baby. Oh, yeah, that nothing's... Unless they've just finished, maybe. Unless, you know, we're just getting... When it's zooming in, we're just getting the end part. They've had their release, and they're like, oh, baby. Oh.
Well, Tommy's sort of comatose at this stage, but just from past experience, you know, the oh, baby, I mean, that alone is enough. You know, no further movement is needed.
Right.
The oh, baby just does it, you see? But yeah, no. So yeah, it's a very unenthusiastic sex there. But then, of course, we're sort of recovering, and the blonde bombshell... is the, or as you called it, what, Lady Lavender pulls out a knife and stabs Tommy and then morphs into the tall man. So I don't know whether the tall man's actually got his chode out at this stage or what's going on, but he morphs into the tall, well, she morphs into the tall man.
Yeah, sounds about right. I think he's like an alien of some sorts, but he's a, you know, he's a shapeshifter as well. So, you know, this, it's spooky stuff.
We've got a problem on our hands. I actually put down initially, before I realised he was called the tall man, I actually put him down as the sorcerer.
Right.
But he is, in fact, because I thought he was like a weird wizard. But no, he's an alien, isn't he, basically?
No, I think if you put a hat and a cloak on him, could be getting some wizard stuff on. Maybe a long beard.
Yeah.
But the thing about this graveyard stuff is, like, you know, so you get this, you know, like, it's been done before, you've seen this. It's like gothic, isn't it? It's how, you know, if you're a goth or you're into that sort of stuff, it's like, oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, you get a kick out of that. You know, getting banged in a graveyard is the dream.
Mm.
You watch this, you're like, oh, that's, you know, okay, well, you know, whatever, Tommy. I suppose you're just out, you know, young, frolicking around, you know, things happen. We're not going to see that again. That's a one-off. Oh, no. We get back to this graveyard again.
Oh, yeah. The go-to location, isn't it? This seems to be where, well, we initially think the Lavender Lady is her chosen spot, but actually it's just a way to lure them into the area, it's like a funeral parlor, isn't it?
The mausoleum.
Mausoleum, that's what you call it, yeah. Just quickly, just to clarify, you know, this Tommy character, that is a friend of Jodie, is it? That's not a brother.
Oh, no, I don't think so. No, it's just a friend, yeah. Well, mate, they're part of that band. You know, we'll get to that in a bit. When they start jamming.
Right, so that's Tommy. So that's kind of our kickoff, isn't it? And then we sort of cut to Jodie, who's looking around the mausoleum, the marble corridors. Quite atmospheric, this. What do you think of this setting? You know, this sort of marble, white, washed out marble look.
Yeah, it looks pretty good. Yeah. I think it was done with just a bit of plyo, I think, painted and just put up. It's pretty well constructed on a tight budget.
So that's Jodie sort of walking around. We don't quite know what he's there to do. But then we also cut to young Mike arriving at the cemetery on his motorbike and motorbiking around the graves. Now, I've got to say, before I, when I was first watching this, I was I was struggling very much to identify Mike's gender. I wasn't entirely sure what we were dealing with there.
Well, we're in the 70s here, so, you know, people's choice of hairstyle is, well, yeah, you know, just a bob, isn't it?
Well, it's insane, isn't it? I mean, everyone's got the same, basically got the same hairdo, apart from old Reggie, who's unfortunately lost his. He's trying to sort of compensate by growing that ponytail out. It's a town that's just in serious need of a barber's, because I mean, everyone's just got basically the same horrendous hairdo.
Well, you get a clip right at the start before Jody even gets to the mausoleum, where they're just chatting. They go, "Oh, Tommy, I can't believe it. You know, he's dead." And Reggie's got these glasses on. I think if you squint and have a look, it looks like Butterball.
Well, I actually had another Butterball example, and it was the old woman a bit later on. I think she looks slightly Butterball-esque because she's got the glasses on. You know, the old grandma.
Yeah,
there's some Butterball stuff going on.
There's a lot of Butterball, Butterball Morpheus-esque shades going on in this.
Yeah. No, it's alarming. But we then go back into the house with Jody looking around, and a hand comes down on his shoulder, and it's the tall man. And the tall man, and it's the first time we hear the tall man speak. And he goes, "The funeral is about to begin, sir." So that's basically how the guy speaks throughout the whole of this.
"The funeral is about to begin, sir."
Well, I don't know what that is. But he brings him in. So we realise Jody is there for the funeral of old Tommy. Where do we go from here?
So then you've got, yeah, as you said, Mike's rolled in on the dirt bike. Yeah, that's appropriate. Just you know, basically just driving over graves. Very good. He gets in the bush with his binoculars and starts zooming, having a look. I mean, the people in the funeral, I think all the extras, I believe a lot of them were just friends and family of the director and co. They just didn't have any money to hire real extras.
Mike at this point has dismounted the dirt bike and is now hiding in the bushes with a pair of binoculars, spying on the tall man.
And then cuts to the tall man picking up the car seat and just lobbing it in the back of that hearse. They're very impressive. Oh, yeah. You see there's a crack on top of the lid and there's some rope on the side. Because I think the guy, it's obviously empty, but I think the guy had tried to lift it a couple of times, struggled with it. He cracked the lid. They put the rope on the side to make sure the lid didn't fall off. So
a couple of strings, you know, left unhidden. But yeah, so this is our first kind of, well, he's got superhuman strength because, you know, we just saw that coffin being carried by, you know, 6-7 people. The tall man's basically just sort of picked it up on one hand and just flung it in. We then have we then have old Mike is walking along and visits a house. He knocks on a door and he's invited in by a young girl who brings him in to see her grandmother, who's some kind of medium. I don't quite know what this is. She's some kind of medium, is she? She a witch? What's going on?
Well, yeah, I think she's just. I'm guessing at the end when she starts laughing, she starts cackling. Is that to imply she's like a con artist? She's one of these mediums that just cons people and they go and go, "Oh, I want to speak to him." And is she there, grandmother? "Oh, she's here, Charles. Yeah, she's saying she's missing you and do well in school." "Oh, fantastic. Oh, that's $100, please." She starts cackling at the end of this. So it's like, well, what's funny? What have I missed?
Yeah, I mean, it's a slightly weird scene because it's like the young girl sits with her grandmother. And during the medium scene where Mike's sort of talking, well, it's almost like a sort of vague sort of a therapy session. You know, Mike's talking about, well, you know, Jody's going to, you know, mum and dad have died. You know, Jody's going to leave. He's got this thing. He overhears his brother talking to one of his friends when he's under the car about, you know, "Oh, you know, the kid's 13. You know, soon I'm going to send him off and I'm going to get out of this town." So he's got a bit of a complex about, he's lost his parents. He's got a complex about losing his brother as well. So he's talking through to the medium about all this. And then this box kind of like magically appears, sort of zaps into focus. And the girl goes, you know, "Put your hand in the bars," because she's talking for the old woman who's like deaf, well, supposedly deaf and dumb or whatever. And well, he puts his hand in this box. And it's just, again, I wasn't entirely sure what was going on here. It's just the girl just starts reeling off, just, "Don't fear." He's going like, "I can't get my hand out. Don't fear.
Fear is the killer." Also before this, she goes, "Oh, grandmother wants to play a little game." All right, so we've got some Saw grandmother over here.
Game! Oh,
God.
Yeah. So we've got basically Jigsaw / Butterball grandmother sitting there.
We also get with this film a few times where you get shots of the person speaking and they start narrating themselves in the next scene. So as you said, there's the bit where he's under the car, but he's kind of narrating that scene when he's still sitting in the chair at the grandmother's. And you also get it where Jody's then talking to that bloke who pops up. "Is this town like driving you crazy? you want to leave? Yeah, I'm going to leave. You know, I think I'm going to send old Mike off to live with his aunt. So then you get that while he's driving off. So then Jodie starts narrating his next scene while he's in the car driving off. You just get this clip of Mike in the background just hopping fences, chasing after him. Because that's all he does. All Mike does in this film is just follow him around. He's a stalker. He's constantly running after him. Every scene he's there. And he somehow gets there at the same time as the car. Even though every time you see him, it looks like he's running in slow motion. Oh, no. No, he's the Flash. He's getting there on time. You know, sometimes he gets there before the car.
Or he's teleporting, basically.
So it's very impressive.
Well, is he not on that? Is he not on that on that motorcycle? I mean, is he using that?
I don't think so. He's just constantly running everywhere.
Well, he's just jetpacking around that town, isn't he?
It's just obscene.
I didn't quite understand this thing. It's, I mean, even old Jodie makes reference to the fact that, yeah, he's just following me around. It is odd what his setup is with this. But I guess it could then almost feed into that whole, you know, is it about loss? Is it about, you know, how a young boy would deal with grief? Maybe. Don't know. But it's slightly jarring. But yeah, it's kind of non-linear. You get a lot of kind of cutting back and forth, which made it quite difficult to kind of write in a coherent way about it, because it was, you know, it does in fact jump about a bit. But yeah, so that's kind of the end of the medium sequence. The girl sort of goes, it's not what's in front of you, Mike. It's fear that's the killer. That's what she wanted you to learn. And then he like pulls out his $5, puts it on the box. And then the box and the $5 just sort of levitate off.
Oh yeah. That's when Granny starts cackling. Mike's been done.
Yeah, I mean, it's just unbelievably campy, isn't it?
How do you feel about funerals? Because as Jodie says to this bloke who pops up, he goes, I just don't get off on funerals, man. They give me the creeps. What's that? What do you mean? Well, who's going to a funeral going like, oh yeah.
So, oh, I'm really gay. Really enjoying this. Well, I don't know. Maybe the first two people in the film, you know, who chose the graveyard as the main spot.
Just sitting there going, yeah, you know, I'm looking forward to that buffet spread after this. Oh, yeah. Pretty good.
Yeah, no, it's, yeah, I'm not entirely sure. I mean, I actually don't know. There are moments in this where I couldn't work out who gave a worse performance, either Jodie or Mike. Because Mike's, you know, I guess Mike's can be excused because he's quite young. But some of Jodie's sort of...
it's Jodie. Really, I think it's Jodie, yeah. Yeah, Mike's characters, you can kind of get away with it because, yeah, the whole element of, as we said, about him grieving and, you know, him having all these nightmares and he's a kid as well. So I think his character is just supposed to be that way, isn't it? He hasn't got a choice. Oh, yeah, Jodie, infinitely worse. Awful.
Yeah, the delivery is just awful. But we then get, well, I think at this stage it's right to mention the jamming sequence. We cut to Jodie sitting on his front porch and old Reggie rocks up in his ice cream van. And, he's in a full cream number. He's got a pair of white trousers on, white shirt, and a black bow tie. So he just rocks up, you know, in this really hideous cream number. And what do you think? They just start. Well, Joe's sitting there in like a derby hat or whatever.
Well, what happens next can only be described as a scene taken straight out of The Office with David Brent and on the guitar and Gareth harmonizing. just unbelievable. Free love on the free love freeway.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's gone. She's dead. No, she's not dead. She's gone.
No, it's David Brent-esque.
Yeah, it is.
It would be fair to say. But was this the bit when you were saying that it's Tommy was part of the band? Because I actually totally missed that.
No, I meant Tommy. You've got Reggie. Well, Tommy's dead, isn't it? So you've got
the guy died. That's what I mean. The Tommy guy died at the beginning. I think, I didn't know who he was.
I don't know if he was or not. I think potentially the bloke who pops up when he's talking about leaving the town.
Oh, I see.
A lot of the film was cut. The original running time was at like over 3 hours. So there's a lot of stuff that's cut and apparently makes its way into, I think, the fourth one, where they just start flashing back to the first film and they have all these scenes that were cut. Just popping up going, oh God, do you remember this when this happened? But a lot of people said, well, what the fuck's this? When did that happen in the first one? And it was just cut scenes that they just put in as flashbacks. It's just over 90 minutes this. So half the film has been cut out. So there's a lot more branching storylines of other stuff. I think you get a lot more about Jodie working in some bank or something. He has a girlfriend.
How the band started. You know, all that
probably,
kind of
yeah. And I think maybe that bloke who pops up briefly was part of the band. And you also get another scene, I think, where they hang the tall man at some stage. However they manage that. It makes sense, but I guess because there's a few times where it looks like they've killed the tall man, don't they? So I guess they just have more of that where they think he's gone. We've got rid of him, thank God. And he just keeps popping back up again.
Because it does seem like quite a kind of an abrupt end here, because you think, well, this guy, he's basically, indestructible, superhuman strength, but we actually deal with him fairly swiftly at the end. We don't in the sort of right the end scene, but there isn't a great deal of kind of, well, there's obviously threat there, but you'd expect there to be a lot more kind of, oh, we think we dealt with him. Oh no, he's reappeared, weird. Don't know.
Reggie sums up how I would say about this podcast. He turns to old Jody and goes, are we hard as love? Yeah, absolutely, Reggie. It is hard. It's hard.
Yeah, it was hard. Yeah, some Limp Bizkit. We then have this scene where Jody leaves the bar with the blonde girl from the beginning, the femme fatale, who's, in fact, we kind of know at this stage, is actually the tall man.
Basically the quickest, I don't know what he's been saying to her, but he's just walked in and goes, what do you think of this? And she's gone, yes, please.
Yeah. So swift pickup. So they go into the cemetery. Well, she leads him there. And old Mike, of course, hot on his heels, is, scoobering up to that cemetery, catching every, not missing a single detail. And obviously things start getting hot and heavy. I think Jody is removing the panties with the teeth. Yeah.
Oh, we get that clip in a minute. Yeah. Oh my God.
Well, busy and an old Mike in the bush is getting, Christ, here we go. And then, there's a bit of like growling. It sounds like a dog. We don't actually see what it is. Something chases him off. So he goes running south, literally screaming through the cemetery. And, old Jody is busy getting stuck in. He's got the panties in his mouth. And he goes like, what the hell's going on over there? And runs after his brother with these knickers in his mouth.
Well, it's a comedy sketch, isn't it? It's the brother in the bushes looking. She gets the boobs and he's like, oh, with the binoculars. So he's enjoying that, Mikey. And then you just get that little dwarf, we find out. It looks like the character out of Star Wars, isn't it? I can't remember what they're called. I thought they were called sand people, but that's something else. Okay. The little things with the brown cloaks on.
Is it the same thing that what's the thing with the green and the stupid ears? What's that called?
No idea.
Yes, you do. I mean the thing with like the green, the green man in the little robe.
Oh, Yoda.
Yeah, isn't that the Yoda? Right. The Yoda's people.
Oh no, that's something else.
He's just wearing the same clothes.
Yeah. but it's like a comedy skit. He just runs across the screen like just screaming. Aha! You get Jody popping up with the knickers in his teeth, just going like, I think that's a bit of a problem with my brother.
Yeah.
So, what are we doing with those knickers in the teeth? Have you got any experience with knickers in the teeth? Are we meant to think that he's gone down, gripped hold of those knickers in the teeth, and he's gone all the way down to pull them off? How's he managed that?
Well, I mean, I guess some people get off, don't they, on that whole knicker thing? Like, you see people sniffing knickers. Maybe it's the thing that people like to put the knickers in the mouth.
Right. Well, must have been, because I'm pretty sure, I don't think you can take knickers off of your teeth. That's we can, but
mate, it's hell.
You may as well just take them off with the hands and then just shove them in.
Oh,
the
but
teeth.
That's not romantic enough. There's not enough of build up. The teeth is very much is a lot more suggestive.
Said earlier about the whole graveyard sex stuff. What's he doing? He's basically banging this Lady Lavendel on top of Tommy's grave. He just buried this Tommy bloke about 5 minutes ago. He's got his old Dodge car. He's got a house. What's going on?
Yeah, I think she's very much leading the way. She sort of leads them in there, and that's the end of it. I don't know how the old tall man would fare if they ended up sort of banging in the back of his Dodge. You just get the tall man popping up in the back of that car. Don't know. Well, it's all just to be taken with a pinch of salt, isn't it?
Yeah.
But so old Mike runs after, Jody runs after Mike, and we get a bit of nonsense. I don't think there's anything particularly learned at this stage.
He runs after Mike and then he just gives him the keys, isn't he? He goes, basically, Mike, you go home. I've got to finish up here. And then, she's gone. Mike's blown it. He's bloody blown it. And also, I was like, I don't know how he's managed to get Lady Lavender so quick, but maybe it's because of that stringy sack t-shirt he's got on as well. It's a lovely arrangement for that. So you get some of them on, you put the t-shirt on, and then also you tie the strings together at the top. We're not doing buttons, we're doing strings.
It's nice. It's a nice piece of cloth. But then the following day we have old Mike pacing through the center of town with deep throwing a lollipop. And he looks out across the road. And I don't know whether you want to have a go at this, but we see
it's so obscene that it's almost veering into Battlefield Earth territory. I couldn't believe what I was seeing.
Yeah.
You hear it for one because it slows down. It's like, oh, yeah. God, like, where's he? What's going on? He's coming in. You're like, what's that noise? And
well, it's like someone with high heels. I mean, it's like you hear like clicking of high heels.
It's the biggest Cubans I've ever seen. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, but the tall man's wearing, I mean, what can only be described as at least sort of an eight inch pair of Cubans. He's absolutely, he's gunning it. Well, I mean, the first thing is before you actually see the Cuban heels, you just see him striding along. And I mean, the sound that these Cubans are making, I mean, you're half expecting him to pop out with a pair of high heels on. And then yeah, he strides on, you see the Cubans. His arms are really waving. I mean, he's got this kind of obscene walk. I don't know whether it's almost because he's, maybe, again, it's a balancing act like Battlefield Earth. You know, maybe he was about to topple over in those Cubans.
Yeah, to be fair to the tall man, he does look a lot more balanced than John Travolta, to be fair.
Yeah.
You know, he looks like he's a lot more in control of what's going on. You know, he's leaving massive dents in the pavement. But he's, you know, he seems like he knows where he's going. He's a man on a mission.
Well, he's blowing everyone's eardrums out as well. You know,
it's crazy.
Well,
stuff.
It's crazy, isn't it? And then just to add on top of this, we have he stops right in front of old Reggie. Is fairly oblivious to all of this and is busy putting something in the deep freezer in the back of his van. You know, he's got the old cream number on again. And yeah, well, the tall man kind of stops and all this steam is around him and. I don't know whether he's kind of sensing Mike's presence or getting his essence or something.
But later on, it's implied that he doesn't like cold. He's affected by the cold. Wherever that planet is from, it's hot. You know, it's hard. You see,
yeah.
It's like he's kind of breathing in. He's like, But I think that's what's implied. Yeah, he doesn't like the cold, old tall man.
Oh, I see. Oh, I thought it was that he was capturing the essence of Mike, because then that leads us in quite nicely to the next scene where Mike is underneath the car doing some, you know, fiddling about, and he hears some sort of some pitter-patter of footsteps around the car. Someone basically pulls out the stand, so the car kind of comes down on top of him, and then he sees, you know, another pair of feet standing looking, and he picks up a hammer and clubs the foot. Well, of course, it's Jody standing with his feet together, as you do. Then I have this little interaction where it's like, you know, Jody's kind of going, what the hell was that? And I heard these noises. They were making all these weird sounds. And Mike's like, and Jody's going, oh, right, okay. Are you sure it wasn't that retarded kid Timmy who was up the street?
Yeah, he tries to fob it off on the retarded kid Jimmy. Christ.
Is it Jimmy or Timmy?
I think it's Jimmy. I thought it was Timmy. I think it's Jimmy.
It's Jimmy.
I think it's Jimmy.
But it's just again, his delivery is just appalling. He's like, oh, give me a break. Like every single one of his lines. I mean, first of all, not that he's not given a huge amount to work with, but at the same time, like his delivery is just absolutely horrendous.
Oh, he's just awful. Awful. Yeah.
It's terrible. And then, like you say, we get this Jimmy fob off on the retarded kid up the road. Well, great.
Just a quick pit stop from the vlog, having listened to hours upon hours of myself and Tom droning on, I'll leave my other co-host, Fiona, out of this for the time being. I salute you for listening up until this point and for any future episodes you may stumble upon. I wouldn't say we've got the most, how would you put it, the most angelic voices. I would just like to take this opportunity to ask you, if you do get a second, to please leave us a review. Just give us 5 stars if you can. Give us 5 stars. It looks good. Keeps the podcast ticking over. It may pop up in other people's news feeds. And then just flog the living hell out of us in the body of the review. You know, we'll take the hit. Anyway, I've kept you too long. So back to the episode. And a big thank you for all the support so far. It's really appreciated. Cheers. I should add very quickly that we will start reading out some of the reviews at the end of the show. Again, you know, maybe think about giving us that 5 star. And then if you feel the need to demolish us in the review itself, then flog away. Best and worst ones, probably the worst ones, we'll start reading them out at the end of the show. Be as gentle as you can be. Cheers.
I think it's at that night that old Mike sneaks into the funeral parlour, doesn't he?
We get a synthesizer, don't we? Yeah, it sounds pretty good. You know, I'm enjoying that. You know, he's trying to sneak in. Well, you know, kicks through the window. Right, well, that's probably created all sorts of noise. It happens also when Jodie then goes back later to go through the same window. That synthesizer is really blowing out, and then it just instantly stops. Jumps the window, just stops. Oh, right. Oh, here we go. Right, next scene. All right, brilliant. It's quite jarring.
But it's actually not bad music. I mean, I actually thought one of the things that this had going for it was the fact that the music does actually complement what's going on quite well, because it's kind of not taking itself too seriously. It's quite campy. And it just makes the whole thing a bit more fun, slightly lighter touch. But yeah, old Mike's gone into the funeral parlor just to sort of see what's going on. And he ends up hiding in a coffin while the Undertaker comes in and, you know, looks around. The Undertaker's then summoned out of the room by the tall man. Mikey then follows him out into the marble corridor and is seized by the Undertaker. And then, yeah, this is, I think, our first view of that, of the ball bearing, of the metal sphere that kind of comes zooming around. First ducked by just sort of lying on the ground, and the ball just kind of comically goes overhead. I mean, it's almost quite sort of Scooby-Doo-esque, this. And then he's seized, and he's tussling about with the Undertaker, bites his arm, and while the sphere's coming towards him, he basically jumps out of the way, and the sphere literally sort of plops onto the guy's head.
It is a plop.
Plop to plop. It's like, yeah, a... You know, it just kind of attaches itself onto his head.
The only way of describing it.
And then you kind of get a close-up of what's going on. You think, right, okay, that's a bit weird. So it's plopped onto the head. And then this little drill bit comes out and basically starts drilling his head. And all of the kind of, and you get this quite gory bit where all the kind of blood is coming squirting out of the end in, like, well, it's sort of a hose pipe arrangement. Yeah? Wait, what do you think of that effect? Did you enjoy that?
Yeah, well, it was pretty good, wasn't it? It wasn't too bad. You can see the ball when it hits, when it plops. You can see some string going on.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, fine, whatever. Apparently, someone threw it like a baseball. They threw it behind the camera and then reversed it. Pretty well done. You know, it looks quite good.
It looks like it's attaching itself to his head.
But then even more alarming than that is that the tall man pops up again. So you get the showdown with him and Mike. And then where we get this chase sequence. Well, you know, how the fuck is the tall man running in those Cubans?
Well, he's not. I mean, a lot of the time, if you actually look at the way he's running, he's actually sort of leaning forward. So I think he's basically just doing a series of trips.
He's constantly off balance, just desperately trying to keep himself afloat.
Well, I think he's tripping towards Mike. It's basically what's going on. And all this stuff where he's clawing out for him. I think he's just trying to reach for the next surface to balance himself. You know. So yeah, he gets this. We get this sort of slight chase sequence. Mike then manages to find a door which he can bolt shut. But actually, he's gone and captured one of the tall man's hands in the door. And we kind of look up, and the tall man's hand's just kind of like clawing around. And he cuts his fingers off, and we just get, well, a sort of a, well, it's a bird's custard mix.
Yeah, it's very yellow.
It's extremely yellow, and we get some kind of fingers, you know, crawling around. But old Mike, he boxes up one of the fingers, is then attacked in a fairly underwhelming little end to the chase by one of the Yodas. Well, we later find out dwarves in cloaks, manages to escape, runs home. And in the next morning, he shows old Jodie the box. He tells him what's been going on. And, you know, Jodie, in true Jodie fashion, you know, just give me a break. Shows him the box. And it's just, well, yeah, it is literally a finger in mustard. The concoctions become increasingly mustardy, I think, in that box.
Then Jodie has to then go and check it out himself, doesn't he? So he goes off, a completely pointless venture. I believe you. Because up to this point, he's not believed Mike. You know, Mike said he's been chased by them, and then the tall man did this, and he's not believed him. He's going, just take a break. You know, I need to finish this jamming session. Just take a break, Mike. Yeah. Barney believes when he sees this finger covered in mustard. He's like, oh, hang on, this is a bit dubious.
Oh, but hang on, what about that? What about the, because it's not just that, is it? Because it obviously then turns into a sort of demonic bumblebee. The finger basically just turns into a big sort of demonic bumblebee, which they're then attempting to put into the garbage disposal with great difficulty. And then randomly, during all this commotion, old Reggie rocks up in a, well, he's gone and put his put some kind of red Aaron jumper over that cream number. Comes in going like, hi guys, Mike, did you fancy riding with me later? It's hot. It's a hot day out. Those shark ices are going to be going like hotcakes. What the hell's going on in here? And this bumblebee comes blowing out of the garbage disposal again. And, well, they managed to get it grounded up, I think, this time. and Reggie's just, you know, he has no idea what's going on.
The old synthesizer kicks back in again. Oh yeah, okay, good, nice. Instantly stops when he jumps through the window. Yeah. And all he does is, as a look in the basement, those dwarfs are kids in robes. That's how they did it. They're just kids. Shoots a couple of dwarfs in the face and then comes back out again. Well, what's that confirmed? Yeah, well, just confirmed there's some dwarfs running around, right? So they've been murdered. There's a bit of a chase sequence, isn't there? Because a car starts coming after him and he's going, there's no one driving there. There's no one driving that mother.
Yeah, there's quite a lot of mother actually in this. There's a mother from Mike a bit later on. Yeah, he's got some mother going on. But
you gotta be shitting me, man. That mother's strong.
That mother's strong. Yeah, it's some of the dialogue's really quite explosive. But yeah, this chase scene erupts and fairly underwhelming. That the old Mike turns up in the Dodge. And well, he managed to fire off a couple of shotty rounds into the engine of this car, and the car goes crashing into the side. And yeah, they go and have a look, and they see one of the dwarfs, and it is in fact a dwarfed version of Tommy from the beginning. So you know, that, we learn a little bit more about what's going on. You know, what do you think of that?
Well, you're like, oh, how's this happened? You know, Tommy's dead. What's this? How? Why? So yeah. You know, it's starting to unfold, isn't it?
We also get that random shot of Reggie returning back to the house.
After this chase sequence, and then just this Myrtle just pops in. Who's Myrtle?
Don't know.
Yeah, I think it's implied that she's the housekeeper or something. But I don't know if that's from, there's more of that in the deleted scenes, but that's it.
Reggie's, well, what, she's doing some house cleaning at, you know, midnight?
Well, yeah, 2 a.m. And oh, Myrtle. Oh, goodness, she was giving me a heart attack. Oh. Yeah, sorry, you know, I just thought, you know, that bathroom needs to be sort of dusted.
Spotted a couple of pubes around that plug hole. Yeah, that was slightly odd, that, but she kind of disappeared. I think that whole thing was, she was just there for a little jump scare, wasn't she, almost? Yeah, they go in and Reggie's got big ideas. You know, he's like, oh, I'm going to lay out that sucker. And old Mike's like, yeah, like you say, you know, are you crazy, man? That mother's strong. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we get a bit
just
of that.
Just get Mike to the fucking antique shop. Just get him over there. Just dump him there. Got enough of him.
Well, that's what they do. They put him over. Old Jody and Reggie put him over to the antique shop for safekeeping. And it's when he's in the antique shop, old Mike, that he comes across an old picture from, you know, I don't know, the 1800s of the tour. Well, you know, sometime way back when, peddling some kind of horse and cart. I think he's wearing the same clothes. I think he's still got the Cubans on.
Oh, yeah.
And he's just kind of looking at the camera, just going like,
Is it implied that when he's looking at this picture and he's zooming in, the head actually turns?
I don't know. I think maybe it's just because it's all around that kind of sorcery stuff, isn't it? So I guess maybe it to him, it appears like that. I don't know.
Well, as you said, the sorcerer.
Well, it is a sorcerer. It isn't a sorcerer like an evil wizard. Is that right?
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Because that's kind of what I'd describe this guy more as than a. But he's ultimately, you know, found out that this guy's been in the town for, you know, God knows how long, and he finds this and he insists on the two girls running the antique, because it's like randomly the two girls running the antique shop, these two like young attractive girls from, assuming, school friends of old Jody, and he insists that they take him home. He's like, you've got to take me home. He's a little bit of a brat, actually, this guy, and so they take him home and. En route, they find Reggie's toppled over ice cream van. So Mike gets out just to sort of check what's going on with those chalk ices. And I think Reggie's not in there. But then he gets back in the car and just take me home. And then, well, the girls refuse to move, at which then the car gets attacked by a wave of Yodas, dwarves in hoods. And you just get this scene where everyone's just screaming and writhing around. What do you think of that bit?
Yeah, it's not too good, is it? Yeah, it's not great. Where's Reggie going again? Where's he going in the ice cream van? So Jody's gone back off to the mausoleum. And you get that several times. People just going backwards and forwards to that fucking mausoleum. Over and over again. I don't know if it's just the way it's been edited together and it's been shot. Or it adds into the element of you don't know what's going on. You know, it's all over the place. You're like, where are we now? Is this a dream? Is it not a dream? It just seems like they're just going backwards and forwards to that mausoleum. Just all film. Over and over again. They're just finding any excuse. Like, God, when was the last I went to that mausoleum? Fucking hell. It's been 2 hours. We need to get back there.
John, do you want to go and just pop your head around the door there? Just
you know,
remind yourself what we're dealing with.
Let's go and get, you know, let's go and find that sphere. Let's go and get some more custard. What are we doing here? I'm bored. So God knows. Yeah. And then, yeah, so we get the girls and we're just screaming. Like, sorry, can you drive? To be fair to Mike, he goes, oh, you know, can you drive, please?
Yeah, like, can you drive? Don't open anywhere. The door.
Yeah, don't open the door. And the door just comes flying open. So yeah, why don't you just turn the car on? What are we doing? Awful.
And then randomly, like, I don't know how this scene kind of comes to its climax moment. Seems to be when Mike basically blows out of the back window.
Well, he headbutts the back screen
and just goes flying out the back window. I'm not sure what's happened there.
He does that again as well. When the tall man kidnaps him.
Oh yeah,
he does it again.
He does.
Well, he's impenetrable to glass, apparently, this bloke. You know, he's kicked that window in, crawled through. He's, you know, nosedived through two windscreen back screens, and he's just come back with a little scratch on him.
It's extraordinary. But he blows out the back window, and then the car drives off. So I'm assuming it's the dwarves driving that car. How's that working? What are we getting the booster seat going? How do they get to those pedals?
Well, I assume one's just using the accelerator, the other one's just put the handbrake down, and the other one's steering. I think there's quite a few of the little devils in there.
That'd be quite an intriguing little shot, wouldn't it? You know, if we were to go back into the car and the two girls in the back, and we just got a three-piece of dwarves driving that car, that'd be quite interesting. But yeah, so we have that. So then one of, you know, I think about three or four scenes of close-up of Mike running.
Oh yeah, more running from Mike.
More running.
You think Jody's gone to the mausoleum. You think, oh God, he's gone back again. You know, he's craving that mausoleum, but he's just sitting in a chair dreaming. So Mike's been taken off to the antique shop. He's gone for a ride with the girls. Jody's just sitting in a chair, just having a nightmare of the tall man. So he's not even left yet. What's he doing? He's just sitting there taking it easy.
Well, by the time Mike gets home, he's going to be like, sorry, Jody, have you been here the whole time?
Yeah.
You know, I've just had a face off with a load of dwarves. What, you've just been sitting here basically having a nap? Sorry, mate. I'll go to that parlor now.
Yeah, sorry. He wakes up. Mike tells him what's happened. You know, I've headbutted the back screen. I've been almost kidnapped by dwarves. He's all kicking off, Jody. What have you been doing? He gets then put in his room. He puts a fucking screwdriver in the door so he can't get out. He then proceeds to make some sort of homemade bomb or something. Yeah, blows a hole in the door, comes out. Jody's left by this stage. He's like, oh, God, I didn't mean to force it. I need to get back to that mausoleum. Bloody hell, how long's it been? He's back in the Dodge. He goes. And then, yeah, Mike's running out, opens the door, and, oh, God, it's the tall man.
I've been waiting for you.
And then he captures him. He captures that. So old Jody's en route to the parlour. Mike's now in the hearse with the tall man, going like, oh, dear. The tall man's cackling, going, we get a bit of that. And then old Mike's packed a gun in his pants. And instead of shooting the tall man, he decides to go again through his favourite passageway. He's going out the back door again. He's going through that back window. So he blows a hole in the back window, jumps through, blows the tyre out, and the car explodes. Fine, whatever you want. And then he makes his way to the funeral parlour. Well, we're back in the funeral parlour with Jody, who's looking in a coffin. Now, can you please tell me what's going on here? Because, well, I mean, Jody opens a coffin up and it looks like he's about to cream his pants.
Yeah, but you've got Mikey who's
suspicious that these dwarfs are actually people who've died, but then the tall man's taken them. So, for example, their parents who have recently died as well.
Okay.
Tommy, because they've seen Tommy. So they think the tall man is taking dead bodies and reanimating them and turning them into dwarfs. Put him in a barrel and then shipping him to his land to do some slaving. So then I think Jody's checked. He's had a look at the coffin to see if he's either his mum or his dad's in there.
Oh,
he can't bring himself to do it. He's like, oh no, I can't. Doesn't do it. Mike then pops up, opens it straight away, and goes, oh yeah, well there you go, it's empty. Told you.
Well, he starts screaming.
Yeah.
Like, ah!
Dwarf.
Yeah. The parents have been dwarfed. Yeah, so they basically reconvene back at the parlour and Jody shoots the ball bearing, the metal full stop, just blows it out the sky. And then, you know, what do you know, so they're just standing in this lobby and then old Reggie just pops up again. Going like, oh, hi, guys. Oh, dear. And there's, oh, Reggie, you know, good to see you. And then there's just like a lot of standing around. There's absolutely zero urgency about this scene at all. They're all just standing around. And they get to this door that they wanted to go in because they hear some noise going on. And I think old Jody looks at Reggie and just goes, you know, after you, my friend, or something. And it's just, there's just absolutely zero urgency. They're just standing around this place. And they go in. Yeah, this is where you see like the portal to the next dimension. You see some other garbage. You see all these. Well, you basically just see a load of, you just see a load of dwarfs in barrels, basically.
Oh, gee, dwarfs. All right.
How are you seeing those doors? Because those doors are in bowels. I mean, for all you know, the guy's from, you know, that's his wine cellar. How do we know what the setup is there?
Well, he just looked in and he's just seen, I don't know, maybe his mum just squished. Oh, gee, dwarf.
Then Mike then gets sort of pops his head around the door, so to speak, of the portal and sees the planet, well, a brief sort of snippet of the red planet that these creatures come from, sees the dwarves, is dragged back out by old Jodie, and then has somehow made the link that, you know, the reason why these dwarves are shrunk is because the planet's hot and the gravity is such that everyone's got to be a dwarf. Is that right?
Well, that's when he links it in with the coal thing as well from earlier, from the ice cream van. He's like, oh, right, yeah. So it's very hot on that planet. So that's maybe why he doesn't like the cold. You wouldn't see Tall Man dead with a chalk ice. There's no way. Too chilly. And then you get Reggie clicking his fingers like he's figured it out by himself. He goes, you know, yeah, heat, gravity and dimensions. Oh, yeah, of course. What took you so long? Oh, God. And the lights go out. Hello? Who's there? Mike? Are you there? Hello? Anyone there?
And then someone whips out a lighter or something, and yeah, whatever. And then you just get all this business where, you know, the wind starts going, you know, they've obviously, you know, created some kind of, I don't know, it's sort of leading towards the final showdown. All this wind goes, they all separate. Reggie ends up getting knifed on his way out of the place. He gets knifed by the Lady Lavender. Mike and Jodie run off. I think do they get separated at this stage?
Well, it's all been cut together, isn't it, badly? Because one minute the lights are off and they're going, hello, anyone there? They're getting attacked by dwarves. And the next minute, everyone's outside. So they found their way out of the dark. You've just got all these empty barrels being blown around. I know a dwarf, and it probably doesn't weigh that much, but they look pretty empty when they're getting blown about the place.
Yeah.
Because Reggie's inadvertently pressed touched the two things, hasn't he? And that's set off God knows what.
The house disintegrates, but old Mike and Jodie are sort of separated, and Jodie's and Mike's tasked with going back home to get more ammo, and Jodie's going to do something else. And then we get another chase scene between the tall man and Mike, and the tall man's just going like, you know, you play a good game, boy. So he's, you know, he's wafting himself along, you know, he's tripping his way.
Are those Cubans not getting stuck in the mud?
Well, I've got no idea how he's making that run across those fields. But I mean, surely those Cubans are flying off. Yeah, yeah, they're getting slightly stuck and he's losing those shoes.
Yeah, there's even a bit where Mike gets stuck in the mud. So you're telling me that, one of those fucking 4-foot Cubans can get stuck in the mud?
Yeah, well, I've got no idea, but they end up luring him to like some kind of mine shaft and yeah, the tall man just falls into the mine shaft. And then he puts a rock over it. That's it.
Someone says about this, how this mine shaft's like 1,000 feet deep.
Yeah.
Well, he lets about 2 big plastic boulders down and then it's full up. Tall man's gone. This 1,000 foot deep mine shaft is full up. You can see that the cloth around it, which is a hole, isn't it? Just built this little hole. You see that the cloth around it just shaking. And well, that's it, yeah. Apparently that's the end of Tall Man. He's gone. They've done it.
We then kind of move on in time. I think Mike is at the graveyard, isn't he? Mike's now back in the daytime. He's at the graveyard and he's looking at the grave of his brother.
So it goes from the mine shaft to then Mike just kind of waking up next to a fire. Well, hang on a minute. Fucking Reggie's back. How's he here? Again? What's he doing here? And then it turns out apparently that all that was a dream. And Reggie has to break it to old Mike that Jodie died in a car crash. And there's no tall man. Jodie's dead. His parents are still dead. Reggie's okay, thank God.
And that he's going to basically be his like carer from there.
His surrogate brother, yeah. I'm not Jodie, but I do my best. Let me just get this guitar out again. Oh, God.
He's still got the bow tie on at this stage.
I think he's just sporting like a nice jumper, actually. He's got a jumper on. What we need is a change of scenery. Road trip! So then Mike goes up to go pack. You know, he's kind of seems like he's gotten over it quite easily. Oh, all right, so Jodie's dead. Parents are dead. That was all a dream. Oh, well, yeah, road trip sounds pretty good. And then whilst he's doing that, Reggie just whips out the Free Love on the Free Love Highway and just starts going at it again.
Free Love,
she's dead. No, she's not dead.
She's not dead. Because none of them was you. What? Who's he singing about? What a bloke?
Hot love on the hot love highway.
Yeah. Well, it's genuinely not far off of David Brent whipping out the guitar. And it's like, well, it's like the whole thing of, you know, he gives this spiel to old Mike about, you know, I'll do my best to protect you. And then he literally goes, you know, go and get the guitar. And then starts ripping out the guitar again. But yeah, so we're back upstairs with Mike, and yeah, well, the tall man's in the wind, in the mirror or something. You know, he's busy there.
Oh, no, hang on. The tall man's just been hung up. He's on the back of the door. Someone's just hung up like a coat.
Yeah.
So he's been hung up on the back of the door, and he's had a haircut.
Oh, the tall man's hair been haircut, has he?
Well, his hair's a lot shorter, yeah. So he's now become a coat, and he's had a haircut.
Well, he's been bullied, hasn't he? Like some bully's just gone and hung him up.
Maybe that's what happens when you fall out of mine shaft. You get a haircut and you become a coat. Yeah, just hooked up on a door.
Well, someone in the town's just seen him mincing along in those Cubans and gone, oh, man. Picked him up and just hung him up. Just gone like that.
Yeah, sorry. That is correct. You know, you're basically creating a fucking earthquake. What are you doing?
Yeah.
You can't be walking.
You're blowing my eardrum out there. I can hear you a mile. I'm hearing you before I'm seeing you with those Cubans on. But yeah, so he's then seized by the tall man. So yeah, maybe it actually wasn't a dream. You know, all this stuff's happened. Yeah.
The tall man, he just, you know, he comes off the hook and goes, boy. And then, well, as you said, the mini dwarf Yodas get him through the mirror. Oh no. Well, they're taking him. Cut to black. It's over.
Well, mate, Phantasm, what do you think? I mean, would you potentially investigate any? I mean, one thing just to say briefly, I did notice was that the sequels, of which there are a number, there's another four, they all, bar the, I think from the third, they're all over 6 rating on IMDb. So I think this one was like a 6.8 or 9. The second one's like a 6.6 or 5. The third one, not far off. And then it looks like they sort of take a bit of a nosedive. Looks like there's maybe a bit of a tailspin in the Phantasm series in the fourth and fifth. I don't know.
A lot of films that they generally get worse and as they go along.
Well, yeah.
I'm exhausted after speaking about that, to be honest. It's because it's just all over the place, isn't it? Yeah. Everything's just, you just don't know what's, you don't know if you're coming or going.
Yeah.
It's just going back to that mausoleum, just several, just over and over again. And then a dream sequence, and then the tall man pops in. And then, well, you know, mercifully, he pops in with those Cubans because you get woken up again. You sort of go like, oh, I'm drifting off it. I don't know what's going on. Boom, boom. Oh, fuck, man. What's that? Oh, Christ.
No, it is. It's, you know, he's got the clogs on and you know where you are. But no, it's all right. I think it's got, I think there's some fairly interesting themes there. I think there are moments, like the acting's not good, but there are moments where I think there's genuine kind of, I think those themes of grief are, in fact, after speaking about it, I think they are kind of explored somewhat. So it's not just totally shallow. I don't think they work that, I don't think they work fully for me. I don't know how invested I am in that side of it, but I appreciate that they're there. Low budget, it's practical. You know, the tall man, bit of a campy character, but, you know, a good attempt at a villain. And, yeah, you know, I think it's all right. Have a look.
I think by the sequel, the whole thing, is it, you know, is it a dream, is it not, is kind of just forgotten about. I think basically at the end of the second one, I mean, they're sitting in a car and they're kind of like, oh, was that a dream? You know, is it real? What's going on?
Then I believe you get the tall man popping in to confirm.
It's not a dream. I think from the second one onwards, there's no mucking about. The studio, we just went, no, we need to make sure that this is happening. This is real. We're not doing this anymore. We're not going, is it a dream? Is it not? It's real. It's happening. There's all these dimensional worlds and all sorts of stuff. So let's just make that clear to everyone. You understand?
Yeah, quite. But yeah, anyway, have a look. Thank you very much. Till next time.
Cheers.
Hello and welcome to What's Our Seat Number. If you're listening to this trailer, you're deciding whether or not you're going to listen to this podcast.
Good.
But chances are, we've lost you already.
Good. Wait, what? No, come on, Matt. What?
Well,
why?
I mean, it takes what, like 10 seconds for people
you're
to lose interest
defeatist.
In things?
You're
I am
being
not being
defeatist.
Defeatist. They've you gone
are.
Already. It's for
now. Well, now they are because we started arguing, so we've both sort of driven them out.
Well, go
right,
on
just
then.
Go on
tell the dead air who we are.
Okay. The dead air.
The dead air.
The cadaver.
The people who aren't listening anymore.
I'm taking control. You introduce yourself, and then I'll introduce myself, and then we'll talk a little bit about what we're doing, right? It's going right, to sound more right, professional
right,
that
okay,
way. Go.
Okay, okay. I'm Johnny Gross. I'm a filmmaker and a film fan and fanatic and obsessive.
Good. Very good. That was very well done. Very professional. You sounded like you're in control and almost like you know who you are.
All right, then. And who are you?
I'm Sai. I'm a 3D artist and a game designer, a film fan. I'm your brother as well.
Really?
So we're going to be talking about some of our favorite movies and hopefully some of yours as well. There's going to be trivia behind the scenes.
Do you want to tell the listeners why we've called this podcast What's Our Seat Number?
You really came to the right person with fielding this question because I feel that I can take this story and really bring it to life. Okay, so one time we went to go and see a film in the cinema and I asked, what's our seat number?
Fantastic.
Was it good?
Yeah.
I did it for you.
It's great. If you want to hear more, you can check out the rest of our episodes. We're hosted by Podbean, but you can also find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music or Audible, TuneIn, Alexa, Listen Notes, and now on iHeartRadio, Player FM, and Podchaser. So pretty much wherever you get your podcasts. Please don't forget to review, like, and rate, and keep listening, because the more you listen, the more we'll be able to produce. Bye.
Ta-ta.